Hey, it's Weezone. You're listening to Current Events, Politics, Presidents, and much more with Adam Lept and our official presidentologist, Dr. Ron Feinman, on a finer mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the professor every Monday morning, starting a few minutes after 10, right here on WWGH 107.1.
And a very happy July 1st. Holy shaboli, the year is at its, well, just about its halfway point. Not exactly because of the number of days and some months, but for all intensive purposes, or intents and purposes, it's the middle of the month. 7/1/19 has a good ring to it. My late maternal grandmother, you know, she would have been 108 today. So I'm sure she's up in heaven smiling at the, well, I wouldn't say success, but at least comic marvels of her beloved grandson. No mention as to how old the grandson is, but, you know, I don't get older. I get better. Start out this nice summery July morning with the return. Yes, he's back. The return of the official presidentologist, Dr. Ronald L. Feinman, from a break. We had a substitute presidentologist, and a very good one, for sure, Mr. Mike Purdy, discussing his book. We laughed, we learned, and once again, folks, if you've not purchased Presidential Insults, 101 Presidential Insults, where we find out that Donald Trump is not the only president who uses language that you wouldn't want to say in front of a lady or your child or even your dog or your grandmother, you'll be sadly mistaken. And one of my favorite presidents, Theodore Roosevelt, was known for some of this locker room talk. And find out more. Just cost you a few bucks on Amazon and on your local bookstore if they're classy enough to carry this publication. Mike Purdy, 101 Presidential Insults. We talked to him. We'll talk to him again, actually, a little later this month. And he is a fellow presidential enthusiast like Dr. Feinman, who has returned from a brief sabbatical. Ron, on this first day of July, how is life treating you?
Good morning. I'm doing fine. How have you been since I've been away? You've been fine, I guess, huh?
Been older, but again, I'm now 1 month into my most recent change of age, as I was born on June 1st. We're not going to talk about the year, but that's
okay. Yeah, I wanted
okay.
to mention, you mentioned about your grandmother would have been 108?
Yes, she was born 7/1.
Well, my father would have been 111 on June 28th. How's that?
Wow. Pretty cool stuff. And my grandma, she was a great person, Ron. And, you know, in many ways, I find myself similar to her. And again, I'm not here to encourage people and lifestyle choices, but she was someone who was overweight and smoked a lot. And she still lived until about 80 years old. She did quit smoking and lose some weight toward the end of her life. But she smoked those Philip Morris Commanders. They're unfiltered cigarettes. They're like an unfiltered
wow.
Camel. And you can barely even get them anymore. They're kind of like a rarity. And, you know, she smoked, I mean, probably a couple packs a day. And again, making choices for your lifestyle and health that may not be considered good affect people in different ways. So we're not here to encourage anything. Just interesting that sometimes people say, oh, you know, my grandma, you know, she didn't exercise and she chain smoked and lived to be 100 years old. Well, I almost feel like my grandma was in that category. And she was just a great person, you know, feisty, smart, but a heart of gold. And other than me being about a foot taller than she is, someone I think was quite similar to myself, and I miss her every day. What a good person she was. And so I kind of think of that whenever that nice even date of July 1st comes upon us. Ron, we're going to talk about some activities that took place during your recent sabbatical, but I certainly want to cover a couple news stories before we dive into that. And, you know, we always seem to spend 10 times as long as expected because we always have things to
yeah.
say, but I do think this is important. So we'll try to be as brief as possible, if that is possible. But a lot of news, Ron, of last past weekend that Donald Trump, the first president to step foot into North Korea, he met with Kim Jong-un at this demilitarized zone, I guess kind of a no man's land between both Koreas. And, of course, a lot of opinions. Fox News not unexpectedly hailing this. Other news outlets kind of wondering why Donald's talking to someone who is not known as a nice guy. He might smile a lot. He might have a younger, pretty wife just like Donald does. But inside is not a very good person. Obviously, Ron, when you're the leader of the free world, which is what Donald Trump is, you have to get along with everybody. That includes people who are allies. And ironically, he seems to get along better with Kim Jong-un than he does with someone we would consider an ally, Justin Trudeau from Canada, for example. But
you're correct.
Do we need to make peace with enemies? Do we need to kind of understand our differences and shake hands? Or is this meeting with Mr. Un very dangerous? What's your take on it? I'm kind of torn. You know, I see both sides. What's going on in your brain when you see those headlines?
Well, I mean, I think the gesture looks nice, but I don't think it means anything in the long run, because I don't think Kim Jong-un is going to give up nuclear weapons or do anything that the United States really wants. And I think that really he's playing Trump, as is China and Russia. And the trouble is that Trump seems to think that because he talks to authoritarians and is so friendly with them that they're going to do what he wants, but they're not going to do it. And meanwhile, he antagonizes Germany and England and France and Canada and Japan and South Korea. And I just think it's very dangerous. It reminds me very much of what happened before World War II with the British Prime Minister Neville Chamberlain courting up to Hitler, but it didn't prevent World War II. And I just worry about is naivete, I think, that Trump has about authoritarians.
Now, we would agree that it took nerve, for lack of a better term, or you say cojones, we say that sometimes, to visit with Un. And you have to take your hat off to Trump, but, you know, as a person with a show business background, you know, not being afraid to say you're fired on TV and kind of make a mockery of it, he will do things that are unconventional, which can be bad and can be good. And we're all in this world together. We don't even claim that Donald Trump is thinking that Un is a good guy, but do we have to coexist? Will Un maybe change his policies? I guess we don't know. Is it anything like Nixon and some of his foreign policy revolutionary progress, out of lack of a better term, or the visit to China example? Is it put in the same league as that, Ron, or am I kind of barking up the wrong tree by thinking something like that?
I see Nixon as brilliant in diplomacy, but also realistic. I don't think Trump is realistic, and I think that Nixon would certainly approve of the idea of meeting with foreign leaders, but he would also be aware of the fact that you can't expect things to happen you know, without knowledge, and our president has no knowledge of diplomacy, no knowledge of other countries, and I think, you know, that he is not well equipped to make deals as Nixon was.
So maybe on the surface, it seems similar, but inside the minds of these two gentlemen is something that's ticking in a very, very different way. And again, Donald Trump.
I want Nixon back to say that. How's that for a statement? I want Nixon back to deal with our foreign policy right now.
Yeah, I mean,
he'd be much better than Donald Trump.
Donald Trump with his reality show background and Richard Nixon more with his politician background and his presidential nature. Yeah, but things do change. And as an American, it seems like a lot of people, again, a lot of the tried and true Democrats are just hoping that something fails, that Donald Trump just is thought of as a disaster. I don't see that. I see where Americans were on the same team, and I hope that what he does will accomplish things. That doesn't mean I'm not going to change whom I vote for. I think there are alternatives to Donald Trump in 2020, but I still hope that there is success and that this is a fruitful meeting. It is something.
Well, it's certainly better if we have success. There's no question about it. I just have my doubts it's going to happen, but of course it would be better for the country and the world.
But you would agree that there are a lot of people and people with on the surface political beliefs like yours and to the left who are just hoping that anything Donald Trump does is failure, and that's very un-American to me, and I've never understood that. I'm not hoping for any failure.
Well, that is sad when people think that way. I agree with you.
But,
yes.
But you know that does happen, and it's really kind of a shame. I think we should try to be on the same team and understand our differences. And you and I have.
Well, I want to point out that in the last 25 years, there's been such division in this country that Republicans always hoped that Clinton and Obama would fail, just as Democrats hoped that Bush, too, and now Trump would fail. And that's the problem, that we have no sense of commonality anymore in this country. And it's been that way since the 1990s, unfortunately.
Yeah. All sides are guilty, without question. I'm just looking at Democrats because they're the ones who don't inhabit the White House. And maybe that's an advantage. Maybe I'll toot my own horn here as an independent. I hope that who's ever in office will succeed, and especially if something revolutionary like this meeting in Korea taking place. So that's how I see it. So to think maybe my patriotism is enhanced by my independentism, if that's a word. So we'll see. You know, never a dull moment, and I'm sure when we talk again next time on this program, Ron, we'll have more stuff to discuss, debate, delineate, and things like that. Late last week, Ron, we had a celebrity visitor in the WWGH studios. Did you ever watch Hee Haw? Are you a fan of that show?
Which show?
Hee Haw. It was like a country variety show in the 60s and 70s.
Oh, yes. Well, yeah.
You go for that intellectual stuff. Well, Lulu Roman, a longtime cast member, and she's still around. She has a ministry. She sings. She's very funny. She is quite a snappy dresser. Well, she was live in the studio. I interviewed her for a part of an hour. Of course, I got several autographs and lots of photos, and kind of a pleasure to see her in the studio. She looks great. She had weight loss surgery. She's lost weight. She's beautiful. She has that fiery red hair, which is quite cool. She had on overalls with the Hee Haw characters on them, and quite a pleasure. So, Ron, you're in good company as someone who graces our airwaves. We recently had Lulu from Hee Haw, and who knows what else Scott Spears, the interviewer to the stars, has up his sleeve. Never a dull moment at this radio station or in the broadcasting business in general. Of course, we will talk about the Democratic debates, and there were 174 different candidates, so we had to do it in two different days. So we'll go over a couple things. Certainly, Kamala Harris appears to be getting a lot of press. First thing I'll say, and you probably aren't surprised to hear me say this, Ron, before we'll take a break out to discuss a very positive topic before we discuss the debate. But it really seems like Kamala Harris and Cory Booker have a lot of the same platforms, and a lot of them are based upon race. I see a lot of guilt trips being attempted on people, and that's all people of all races and backgrounds. You know, I'm not a fan of either one to begin with, but that's what they have in common. And, of course, what don't they have in common? Well, it's obvious. Kamala has nice hair. I'm not saying I like her politics, but she's attractive. She looks very good for her age. She has a nice head of hair. And Cory Booker, well, he doesn't have any hair, which might make it interesting. Again, if Joe Biden were to sit in the middle of them, would he really be a person with a hair-sniffing fetish? Well, I guess we'll find out if that ever takes place. So we have, of course, two rather controversial people, Jeff Bezos and Cory Booker, who both seem to go to the same hairdresser. You think they both have quite a bit of money and think they could afford to buy a wig, but maybe that's just part of their look. You know, that Michael Jordan look has been in since Michael Jordan graced the basketball courts, and it does look good on some people. But I must say, yeah, there are some very interesting, some rather attractive female candidates in this debate. And we, of course, judge candidates on many different grounds. We have someone we both like, Amy Klobuchar. She has short hair, but she has it, I think, in a very appealing style. And I see her, again, along with, of course, the aforementioned Mr. Biden, as the good mainstream middle-of-the-road candidates. And, yeah, before we go off on a tangent again, let's go to the other topic, and then we'll get to the debate. During your three-week sabbatical, Ron, you and your son—
actually, we're 2 weeks off, yes.
Yeah. Who himself celebrated a milestone birthday, took a trip to Western Europe. And that was rather fascinating. What were some of the highlights of your trip to
I went with my son David to celebrate his 40th birthday, and he was born on Father's Day in 1979, and he paid for the whole trip to honor me for my 40 years of being his dad. And I thought it was a wonderful trip. We got along very well. We had a great time. We spent 7 days in London and 2 days in Paris, and then we spent a day at each end, of course, coming back and going back, you know, going back and forth. But we saw a lot of, you know, we saw everything you could imagine in London. We saw Stonehenge, which was fantastic, Stonehenge. And we went to St. Paul's Cathedral and the British Museum and the Houses of Parliament, Westminster Abbey, Trafalgar Square, the National Gallery, London Bridge, Tower Bridge, the National Library, where I discovered both of my books are there. They have them both in the equivalent of the Library of Congress, the Churchill War Rooms, Kensington Palace, Hampton Court Palace, and really impressive, the Imperial War Museum, which had a great exhibit on World War I, World War II, and on the Holocaust, that I think on the Holocaust, almost as good as the Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C. And then in Paris, we did the Arc de Triomphe, Eiffel Tower, Champs-Élysées, the Louvre, and Versailles, and the Louvre and Versailles was so crowded. I've never seen any place with so many people. It was like being in Manhattan in the middle of Times Square. It was so crowded. But you know, but we had a great time, and I learned something I did not know, that there are very few public bathrooms in London and Paris. You have to pay for them in many cases, and many restaurants don't have bathrooms. And they call them toilets, by the way, not bathrooms. And they're elevators, and there aren't very many, are lifts. They're called lifts. Some interesting things I did not know. And the hotels are smaller, and the restaurants are such that you have to go up and down flights of stairs, you know, if they do have a restroom that, you know, a bathroom that you have to pay for. And it's just a very difficult place for disabled people, I would think, because there's very few elevators or lifts. So it's a lot of things that are much different than the United States.
Yeah.
And as my son said, Dad, you are spoiled. And we laughed about it.
Yeah, we may think that the UK and the United States are similar, and certainly there are similarities, but we've seen, and you know, we all agree with the ADA, we have seen the many advances that's made, and not just for people who are disabled. Again, just the ease of going to the bathroom. And I even see that as a male and female issue. It is more involved. I don't want to get into a biology lesson, but you know what I'm talking about. It's a bit more of an involved process for a female to use the facilities than a male. And I see that as a sexual equality or even discrimination issue. And maybe they should take some lessons from Americans. Maybe I don't see where I think we're spoiled. I think that it's a biological need, and we need to have restrooms available. And that's just for people who may not have a medical issue. If you do, then it's even more serious. And again, the handicap-friendly nature of the United States. And again, in Florida, where there are a lot of retired and elderly people, where you live, Ron.
Yes.
I mean, and you know, interestingly, in Japan, the elderly are put on a pedestal, and we do that in some ways here, but we could never be up to the level of Japan, and it seems like that is missing in Europe. And it's an excellent point that you bring up. One thing I do know, as someone who just kind of likes to go to buffets and pig out, that's called the American plan at a hotel. Or at least that's what they used to call it, because Americans kind of like to pig out, lack of a better term, in one session. And they like buffets, and like especially ethnic buffets. You know, my affinity for Asian buffets, and that's not as common if it's existent at all in Europe. A European plan where it's more a la carte. France is known where you just buy little plates at a time, and the tapas in Spain where you get a little portion at one time, and that's something else that's kind of uniquely American. And there's things that
yeah,
you
notice.
Yeah,
I wanted to mention that tips are built into the price. You don't give tips. They're built into the price at most restaurants, which 12.5%, which is low. But the thing is, they do not ordinarily have the idea that you give tips. They put it into the price. They add it in automatically. So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, there just are differences in culture. And when you're in the UK, at least you speak the same language. Then you go to France, and French is a rather difficult language. And that's where you have a language barrier also, as well as the cultural barrier. Plus, there are rumors that French people aren't quite as hospitable to Americans as they are in some countries.
They're not. I'll tell you honestly, even David, who has traveled elsewhere in Europe, says other countries, they have no problem with the fact that you speak English. But in France, even in the restaurants, we had trouble communicating because we don't speak French. And like I had to put up two fingers to point out two, you know, for two this or two that, T-W-O, because they didn't know it. And generally, they don't step aside when you're walking in the streets. Neither do the English, by the way. They tend to keep on walking straight. You have to move over for them. There's no such thing as each side sort of like giving way for the other. People just barge ahead, and that's what I found in London and Paris, even in London. So I think they're less polite, as far as I could see, than Americans seem to be.
Yeah, you think of English people as being prim and proper, and the Queen's English, and, well, maybe not quite the case. I've never been to the UK. I kind of sad to say at my age I haven't been, so I go by what people tell me.
I'm the first time going to both, so you still got time.
Do you like the accent, Ron? Do you think that they talk kind of cool, or does it get annoying after a while? Did they kind of pick up that you were an American and with a bit of an East Coast accent? Did that intrigue people? Did it annoy them, or was there any issues at all with just the dialect and the accent?
I think in the restaurants they were friendly, but honestly, I had trouble understanding some of their English because some of them have an unusual way. You know, there's different accents there too. So, but I tell you, in France, it's very difficult because they don't seem to really, the general statement is they don't seem to like Americans. And David said he'd been in France before, and he said they're just less friendly from what he's seen than other nations in Europe.
Yeah, I've heard.
So, like, off limits, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I am used to French Canada as I went to college. I mean, an hour drive from the French-Canadian border. I remember going to Sherbrooke, which is a little closer to my college than Montreal. It's a smaller city, so it is more French, and people don't really speak English, but they were nice. It is near the U.S. border, and Canada does have
to. Yeah, I must say, I've been in Montreal and Toronto. I prefer Toronto. I found it was much more difficult being in Montreal because they speak French. I thought Toronto was an easier city, more like New York City or Chicago.
But, yeah, in France, it's their language. And, you know, I don't want to be hypocritical. I want to say if you're an American, you're in the United States, and, you know, the controversial area, you're looking to become a citizen, speak the language. Learn the culture. And again, it's different if you are traveling. You're not going there to live, but you should certainly find some ways to communicate. And there are differences in the way that people may be perceived. But again, it's good to be multicultural, learn about people from different areas. You know, again, we're all Homo sapiens. That's what's important. We should all be on the same team. But we should also embrace our differences and learn from each other. Certainly from what I've heard, Ron, Spain is a very, very friendly country.
Yeah, Spain's a country I like to visit, in Italy. Those are two next on my list if I ever get a chance to go. But I've never traveled to Europe before. The only thing I've been to Israel before for my youngest son, Paul's bar mitzvah, back in 1996.
And I would
but
think,
other than that, I've never been in Europe or anywhere else. So this was a wonderful trip, and I hope I can go to Spain and or Italy in the future.
I would think Germany, Taiwan, Japan also. Germans, they generally speak both languages. I know a little German anyway. I know enough that I could communicate in a basic way, and I know the food, and I'm good at pronouncing the word. So that would be a good place to go. And, you know, certainly if I go to any Asian country, I would just be in heaven from all that food, which make no secret of is my favorite kind of food, and just the culture. Japan is such a fascinating country. And it's
have you been overseas at all?
Not since I was born. Again, when my dad.
I've been in Canada and the U.S.,
yeah,
but that's it.
Mexico and Canada. I mean, Canada multiple times. But I've not been anywhere since 9/11, since the strengthening of requirements for crossing the border. I don't want to talk too much about border crossing because that's a hot one, but there are certainly stricter requirements both directions since 9/11. I've not left the great United States since then, but I certainly think I probably should. I think I really should spend a little time away from my home base, but it seems like I never do, and that's something I can only blame myself for, so I am not.
Well, I have to thank my son for, you know, for doing this for me, because I don't think I would have gone on my own at this point, but it's a wonderful thing. It makes me feel good that your son appreciates what you've done for him.
The people, especially in France, I know Canada has that influence. People dress better, don't they? People don't go and wear, even if they go to Walmart, they don't wear sweatpants or shirts with holes in them or shoes that are falling apart. Even if you just go to a fast food or to a discount store, people, especially in France, and I'm looking at French Canada that way, people just dress a little classier, don't they? They comb their hair, etc. Is that something that is exaggerated, or is it changed, or is that kind of still the way it is?
I don't know. I'm not really sure how to answer that. It's really, I think that maybe we're more casual than people in other countries, I'd say. But one thing I'll tell you, everybody on the subway trains, it's like cattle cars in both London and Paris, so crowded, like New York City, extremely crowded. And everybody's on their phone. Everybody. It's like I'm the one person who doesn't have a smartphone, and I feel like I'm from the 20th century and everybody else is the 21st.
Is it any different than it is here? I mean, people are constantly, if they're not talking on the phone, they're playing a game or they're texting or they're checking email. I don't see much of a difference.
I guess it is pretty much the same, yes. but I felt almost like I was in another world because I have the computer I use at home, a desktop, and at work, and I have the flip phone if I have to make a phone call, and I don't see any need for a smartphone, so I don't have one. And even David says, my life with what I do now, I don't need it, but everybody does it. Everybody does. And one other thing I wanted to mention on the subway, there are seats set aside for, you know, for senior citizens and for disabled people and also for people who are pregnant, all right? And at one point, I was standing and this young guy was sitting and he looked up at me and he was, looking me over. And after a minute, he said, I guess he decided I was a senior citizen. And he says, do you want to sit here? And I said, thanks. But it took him a while, so I told David, I feel proud. He wasn't sure whether I was old enough to be a senior citizen.
Make no secret, you do age quite well, and even those photos.
I noticed in Great Britain, almost everybody's blonde hair and blue-eyed, and David said, of course, they're from Northern Europe, like Germans and Scandinavians. In France, they're all dark-haired.
Yeah, we notice other countries aren't the melting pot we are here. And that's something else that makes it.
Everybody's bloody and blue-eyed in England, I swear, just about, except for those who obviously are Muslims or people from other areas like India, But I'm saying as far as those who are, as I call Anglo-whites, they're all blonde hair and blue-eyed. It's much more than in this country, even, because we are more, as you say, a melting pot.
Yes. Mayor of London, Mr. Khan, I believe, he is a Muslim, which is a bit of an irony, I guess.
Yeah.
Is that a big news topic in London, that they have a mayor who's of a religion that's a definite minority there? Is that a concern, or people not really care anymore?
Nothing I could see from, as far as watching the news there, no. And honestly, one of the things is on TV in England, they hardly talk about Donald Trump. They really do. Only when it's a major story. Donald Trump is not the center of everything because it's not the United States. It's a foreign country, so... So he's not the center of everything, but there's a lot of anti-Trump feeling in both Britain and France. There's no question about that.
If I'm not mistaken, you are against the Brexit. I may be wrong about that. Having been to the UK,
I'm against Brexit. Yes.
Has your opinion changed? Has it strengthened, or has it not mattered since you've?
I think it's a disaster. And I think Boris Johnson, who looks like he's going to be the new prime minister, is a real character. Is like a Trump type, and I think it's going to be problematical for Great Britain. And for the world, really, I just don't think he's the right person to be the prime minister. I hope the other guy, Hunt, ends up as the prime minister, the competitor. But they're making fun of him there, I notice. They mispronounce his name, or they put in a different letter. Instead of H, they put in C. They've said this by accident, maybe accidentally or not, but I thought, oh, how gross can you be,
Well, people have sometimes R-rated senses of humor, regardless of what country they hang there.
Yeah, Michael Hunt becomes Michael C. blah blah blah. You can figure it out.
So you would say, Ron, that your opinion, which is against Brexit, has been strengthened by your visit there, or certainly been.
And actually, from what I've read, London is against Brexit. It's the rural areas of England and also the rest of the island that are for it. It's much like this country, where we have the coastlines are one way and the flyover states, many of them, are another way. So we have a rural, urban, and suburban split. Rural on one side, urban and suburban on the other side, both in Britain and in the United States.
Yeah, and we may want to sometime have a debate between you and my longtime friend, business associate, and occasional show guest, Nick C.J., who is very pro Brexit. He lives in a rural part of Wales, just over the Wales-England border. And maybe interesting to have a little talk and see exactly why two people, roughly the same age, both highly intelligent and educated, have such differing views. Maybe we'll ponder doing that at some time in the future. Well, I'm glad that your trip was a success and you bonded with your now 40-year-old son. How about them apples, as they say? And you are back writing your blog. Ron is the author of the blog, which he's been doing for 10 years plus.
11 now, in August it'll be, yes.
The ProgressiveProfessor.com. Please visit that blog, bookmark it, read it regularly, tell your friends and family about it. I assure you, your ears and your brain and your eyes and every other body part will thank you. This show is called The Finer, Mid-Morning Coffee Break with Adam and the Professor, Adam being myself, and the professor being Dr. Ron L. Feynman, our official presidentologist, as he returns from a brief break from our airwaves. Well, It's time, because we only have about 14 minutes left, to go to the big topic, one that I know you have all been waiting for, and that would be the two-part debate between the 174 different Democratic candidates. It seems like we have been inflicted, Ron, with Kamala mania. Kind of like the sound of that. Kamala mania. I make no secret about, I do like her hair. I do think, in a general level, she is a smart person. But I don't like her politics, and I'm finding that along with someone else I don't like, that would be the tall, hairless one, Cory Booker, she's making a big issue about race. And it seems like it's race this, race that, the busing, her talk with Joe Biden about some people Joe is associated with that may be characters you don't want to be associated with, things he may have said about busing, words being twisted. Photos of her when she was involved in some segregation-related issues as a young lady. What do you make about this, Ron? Is this Kamala mania here to stay? We've already said that she's kind of like the female Barack Obama. Well, Barack Obama kind of caused Obama mania, and look what happened. He became a president and a rather popular one for two terms. Could this be the beginning of Obama mania, the female side with Kamala mania? What do you make of this?
Well, I think she's one of a small number that really stands out. I don't necessarily think of her as the most likely person to become the nominee, but I think on the second night, she and also, I think, Mayor Pete stood out, in my opinion. I think Joe Biden did terribly, I think, which upsets me, but I also watched him and I'm thinking, is he maybe over the hill? I don't know. I'm starting to think, even my son, who is a big Joe Biden fan, says he's starting to wonder if maybe Joe shouldn't be running and that maybe he's not up to it to do this for the next 4 to 8 years into his mid-80s. And I wonder about it. I do think Mayor Pete did very well. I think Harris got more attention, but I think Mayor Pete did well. And also, although people laugh at me, I think Eric Swalwell, the California congressman, talking about the whole idea of a new generation of leadership because he's so young. He's one of the three youngest candidates in the race. And the whole idea of passing the torch, as John F. Kennedy said, I think he was interesting. And although I know she's not going anywhere, I thought the author Marianne Williamson had some interesting things to say, but I got ridiculed. I see on Facebook where some people say, what's wrong with your mind? She's a moron. And I don't think she's a moron. I think she's a wonderful human being who has some great ideas. I agree she's not going anywhere. But I think on that second debate, I think Kamala and Pete were the best. Eric Swalwell and Marianne Williamson should gain some notice, as I've said. I'm not saying either is going to get it, particularly Marianne Williamson. But I thought Joe Biden really was not what he should have been, what I would have hoped he would be. And the first night, I think definitely Julian Castro was really outstanding, as was Elizabeth Warren, very good, and Jay Inslee, the Washington State governor. So I think those are the ones, as I wrote on my blog, that I think stand out the most. And right now, I'm not giving up on Joe, but I'm not that happy with him. Right now, if I had to pick among the others, I think I would go for Julian Castro. I really like him a lot at the moment, and I think, you know, he really came from nowhere because he's not good in the polls, and it looks like he's rising, and I think he's someone to watch, and he is Latino, represents the largest minority group in America, and I think, you know, he has the right administrative background as HUD secretary under Obama and mayor of San Antonio, seventh largest city, so I think he's someone to watch.
He is impressive, and certainly things that we've heard about Mr. Buttigieg, or whatever his name is he doesn't really talk much about the issues. He talks about just his progress, almost a bit boastful. And we know he's smart. We don't question that. He is interesting.
We've got the racial issues that went on with this. With this murder that of a black citizen in South Bend, so that's causing him trouble at the moment. But I think he'll overcome that. I hope.
I think he's crafty enough, but we really shall see. It's still kind of hard to tell what his stand is on some issues, and I'm seeing some flip flopping. At least with Biden, you know, he doesn't take himself too seriously, and he understands if he may have said something which may be perceived wrong or just may have been stupid. And I do admire that. Let's contrast that with Donald Trump, who always thinks he's right. You think
well, one thing about Joe is he's got a long record, and unfortunately, he's made mistakes. We all do. But the thing is, there are, as you would say, quote, skeletons in his closet, and I think his opponents are going to bring them out, and he's got to be good at defending. But I don't think he planned for this debate very well, and I don't even think Bernie Sanders planned that well for this debate. I don't think he did as well as people would have thought he would have done either. And I'm still wondering about the age issue. Is it a good idea to have someone that, in either case, will be 80 within 8 months, in the case of Sanders, or 14 months in the case of Joe Biden, reaching their 80s. What if they get dementia? Now, anybody can get dementia at any age, but when you're older and you're in a pressure job like that, I wonder about it. So I'm having my second thoughts on Joe Biden. Love the guy, but whether he should be our president, I'm not as sure as I once was.
I really think, Ron,
and I was never a Bernie fan, so I don't see him going all the way either.
You would probably agree, but it seems like a lot of Sanders supporters don't care what he says or what he looks like, whether he combs his hair or if he's 150 years old. They'll vote for him anyway because he is different. Yes, he is different. And in the process of talking about his politics and what party he identifies with, he will alienate people like myself. He's not going to get my vote. He knows that. He's not stupid. He has his base. I don't think it's really going to matter. He is a unique candidate, and give him credit for that. But I don't think with his supporters it's not going to matter. I would say some of the Biden people may have, like yourself, saying, well, maybe Castro is a better choice. He's like Biden in some ways, but he's younger, he's more vibrant, and he represents a demographic that's going to get votes, an old white guy from Delaware versus a young middle-aged Latino guy from Texas. Our largest
and want to point out also, coming from Delaware, ordinarily, who would pay attention to a politician from Delaware? It's such a small state, only has 3 electoral votes. It's only because Joe Biden has always been a star for so many years. But otherwise, who would care about somebody from Delaware seriously for president?
I mean, if we had something like Castro and Harris as president and vice president, not necessarily in that order, we'd be talking about a large part of the population of the United States. And what could that potentially bring? Now, one thing we do have to look at realistically is minorities. And again, I stress women are not a minority. In fact, they're actually a majority of adults in terms of number of humans per sex. However, when it comes to president, females a minority because we've never had a female. In fact, it's now more of a minority than being black as we've had Obama. But if
I want to point out that yesterday on my blog, I wrote, are we ready for another revolutionary change beyond Barack Obama? So I say, is the nation ready to do any of the following? Elect the first woman president, Warren, Harris, Klobuchar, Gillibrand, or Gabbard. Elect the first mixed-race woman president, Harris. Elect the second African-American male president, Cory Booker. Elect the first Latino president, Julian Castro. Elect the first gay president, Pete Buttigieg. Elect our first Jewish president, Bernie Sanders or Michael Bennett. Elect our first Hindu president, Tulsi Gabbard, who was born in the U.S. territory of American Samoa. Imagine that. Yeah. Elect our oldest first-term president at inauguration, Sanders, Biden, or Warren. Elect the first president who would reach 80 years of age in office, Sanders or Biden. Elect our first sitting mayor, Pete Buttigieg or Bill de Blasio. Elect the first sitting congressman since James A. Garfield in 1880, Tulsi Gabbard, Seth Moulton, Tim Ryan, Eric Swalwell. Or elect a president younger than Theodore Roosevelt or John F. Kennedy, Pete Buttigieg, Tulsi Gabbard, Eric Swalwell, Seth Moulton. There's 12 possibilities of what could happen, but at the end, we could end up electing a white male Christian president named Donald Trump again.
Yeah, and I'm all for not thinking that the president has to be an old white guy, but we have to look at practicality. And in the case of Harris, she's essentially a triple minority, a female, Asian Indian descent, and Jamaican descent.
Yes, and now some people are claiming she's not actually black in the sense of being someone with the slavery heritage, which is true. Same with Obama. He had no slavery heritage. His mother was from Kenya. Mother was white. His wife has slavery heritage, but he does not. So neither Obama or Harris really are typical African-American heritage, is what I'm saying.
Right. No, that's why I always use black as the race, as there are differences, and you are very correct in that. And I like the multicultural nature of Harris. I just don't like what she has to say. I just wish we could
nice to look at.
Yeah, I wish we could take her face and her hair and her speech. Just the way
and
she
laugh.
Speaks.
I like her laugh when she laughs. Yeah. I think her laugh is dynamite.
Along with her her ethnicity and maybe paste it on Joe or someone else. But,
you know, we can't do that. And the hair, too, yeah. His hair doesn't look so good lately because he's already had transplants of hair earlier in his career, Joe Biden.
But we shall see what happens. Bottom line is,
yes,
it's making the landscape even more complicated. I'm just still sticking with Joe at this point. I would hope that he picks a vice president that I would find appealing if he were to pick Harris. And I don't think he will. That's going to make it a more difficult choice.
How about Biden-Castro?
Biden-Castro, they get at least an A-. I have no problem voting for them. And that would be a very appealing ticket. And actually, if I were to make my prediction, okay, folks, it's July 1st. That's my prediction. Biden-Castro versus Donald and Mike. Maybe you saw...
Is it Nikki Haley? There's rumors Nikki Haley might replace Mike Pence. I've been wanting to ask you how you feel about that.
I have a good enough opinion about Biden and Castro that I probably would favor them over Donald and Nikki. But if it's someone else, I would have to think about it, especially if Haley were to be the president. But that's probably not going to happen. And, you know, we both like Haley. We don't agree with her on some things like abortion, but on others, including her being multicultural, she'd be an excellent president. She's very smart and not bad looking either. So,
yeah, well, get this. If she was on the ticket, don't forget her background is from India, and then Harris was on the ticket with her mother from India. We'd have both people having Asian-American backgrounds.
That would be intriguing, and all I can say is we shall see. We'll close out the show, Ron, with a comic note. Maybe you saw this meme, and maybe I almost sent it to you, but I thought it would surprise you. People have been using... you've seen that pride background with the rainbow flag kind of waving. And so people have been saying, well, what about Pete Buttigieg for vice president? And of course,
I think it'd be a great idea to have her on the ticket, yes.
Well, Pete Buttigieg for vice president. That's what people are thinking. That might be a good choice. And so what do you think this meme is saying, Ron? Well, it's saying, what's the chance of having two gay men from Indiana as vice president in a row?
Well, everybody knows that people think that Mike Pence, with his anti-gay viewpoint, may be hiding something. I don't know if he really is, but some people think so.
So yes. I'm glad that elicited a giggle, because when I saw that, and you can probably hear the tone in my voice, I did find it to be quite amusing. And I'm not going to make any comments.
And again, remember, if Pete is running mate for vice president against Pence, they have a debate with each other, both from Indiana.
Well, that certainly could be an intriguing issue. And one I think that will get high ratings and more than likely be rebroadcast many times on the comedy channels. Well, on that note, we will close out the return appearance on this first day of July.
Yes, I wanted to mention next week I will be away again. I'm going to be in Washington, D.C., so you're going to have Mike Purdy next Monday.
Yep, Mike Purdy returns next week. Are you going to go say hi to Donald when you're there, Ron, or is that going to be part of your trip?
Well, I'll be there right after July 4th. I'll be going on Saturday. So in 2 weeks I'll be back.
Okay. Well, if you do see Donald, say hi to him for me. And
I doubt I'll see him.
If you see Melania, let me know if her hair smells any good, because I'll let Joe Biden know. So, and that's all for this show, Ron. Thank you again
Thanks so much again for inviting me. I had a great time.
After this brief sabbatical, then another brief sabbatical, and then you're back on the 15th of July. Well, I'm sure we'll talk more about the primaries, maybe recap Donald Trump's visit to Korea and giggle a little bit. And always a surprise or two. Thank you again for joining us here on The Talking Place, WWGH, on a finer mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the Professor.